Check 1, 2.
1, 2, 3. I'm jealous. You got a nicer soundboard than me. Or it looks fancier anyways.
I am recording here, Tom, so I can use any of that.
Oh, that's fine.
Welcome. You're listening to the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast, live from the Fly Fishing Show in Pleasanton, California. Fly Fishing Journeys is proud to be broadcasting live from the event and having great conversations with many of the finest fly fishing and fly tying experts in the world. You can find these podcasts posted to our website, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, and Facebook. To stay up to date with these and other Fly Fishing Journeys adventures, please be sure to follow and subscribe. Here's your host, Rob Giannino.
Thanks, Josh. And on this episode, I was honored to host the original fly fishing podcaster himself, Tom Rosenbauer. Tom is a legend in the industry and the host of the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast. He's an author, TV film host, and serves as the marketing manager for Orvis Rod and Tackle. He's also this year's recipient of the Isaac Walton Award, which is awarded by the American Museum of Fly Fishing to honor and celebrate individuals who live by the complete angler philosophy. I caught up with Tom at the Pleasanton Fly Fishing Show, and we had a great conversation about the origins of Orvis, how the company grew over the years, some things the company is celebrated for, and also some challenges they face in the future. We dive into how Tom grew in the sport and finish discussing his favorite places and style of fly fishing. Just one announcement today, and as you may have heard, Fly Fishing Journeys is heading back to Iceland in 2020 for giant browns, Arctic char, and Atlantic salmon. If you want to travel with us, head over to flyfishingjourneys.com and register for our newsletter for all the details. Before we get over to the show, I need to thank our sponsors. We will be podcasting from all 7 fly fishing shows again next year. Show season is in January through March, and you can find all the locations and detail information at flyfishingshow.com. I love my fully rotating Norweiss Vice. Here's their short message.
From the original prototype designed in the late 70s to our brand new legacy stainless steel vice released in 2018, Norweiss has been committed to one thing, efficiency. Tie better flies faster. A long-standing slogan with the company truly encompasses what the Norweiss fly tying system does. What it means is to tie a fly in less time and more consistently due to the ease and benefits engineered into this outstanding system. For more information, please visit www.nor-vice.com. Norweiss, the most innovative fly tying system on the market.
Well, thank you so much, Josh, and I am honored to have the podcaster himself, Mr. Tom Rosenbauer, on the podcast. Tom is a fly fishing mentor and an author who works with Orvis in Manchester, Vermont. He served as the host for the Orvis Fly Fishing Guide podcast, which has aired since April of 2008, over 10 years. He's also this year's Isaac Walton Award winner, Mr. Tom Rosenbauer. Tom, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Rob. I'm honored to be here.
Wow.
This is fun.
What an exciting time. And here we are in Pleasanton, California.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I was a little bashful about even asking you to be on our podcast.
I know. I can't believe that.
Well, you are, you know, the podcaster. You've been doing it now over 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with Orvis, Tom. It's in Manchester. How did it land in Manchester?
Well, it landed in Manchester because there was a guy named Charles F. Orvis who his family ran the hotel there, the big hotel in town. He started making fishing rods. This was in 1856, and they weren't bamboo then. They were lancewood, greenheart, ash, whatever, you know, solid woods,
yeah.
Whatever they made fly rods out of in those days. He started putting together a list of the rods that he had, and he would send it to the clients of the hotel who were, in the wintertime, were in New York City, Connecticut, because it was a vacation resort. And it's actually the oldest mail order catalog that has survived in the United States now.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And so, what is your current role within Orvis?
Well, right now, this very minute, as of today, I'm the marketing manager for the fly fishing part of the business. So I deal with you know, print ads and electronic ads, and deal with the press and new product introductions and
yeah.
things like that.
Yeah, yeah. And how did you get your start in Orvis?
I started as a clerk in the retail store. I graduated from college in 1976, and I didn't know much else except fly fishing. I had I'd been a fly tire as a teenager, commercial fly tire as a teenager and in college. And I finished with a bachelor's in biology, planned to be a fish biologist, but needed money for grad school. And so I went to work in the Orvis retail store.
What year was that?
76.
76.
Yep. And never left.
That's incredible. And where did you grow up?
Rochester, New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So not too far away, you know, 5 hours away from where I am now.
That's the heart of some awesome fishing there, Rochester.
Yeah, salmon and steelhead, that's for sure.
Yeah, and what was your kind of start in fly fishing, like as a young man or?
Yeah, I was, I don't know, 10, 11, something like that. And my father had always taken me fishing. He was a bait fisherman.
Yep.
And I thought fly fishing looked cool and it looked interesting. So, you know, I read about it in Field and Stream and Outdoor Life and got a couple books out of the library and taught myself, really.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy. It was a long road. A long, long
road.
Was
there a local fly shop in Rochester that
there
you
was.
To?
There was a... I didn't find it until I had been fishing for a couple years, but there was a guy named Carl Coleman who still guides. He's in his 80s now, but he still guides salmon and steelhead. And he really took me under his wing and had me tie flies for a shop. I would make money tying flies and then spend it all on fishing tackle. Now, I learned a lot from him. He was a very important mentor to me.
There you are in Rochester. You're 10 or 11. You start tying flies. You're fishing. Did you go up to any of the tributaries? Like, what type of fishing did you do?
Now, there was no salmon steelhead then. Or there probably were a few steelhead runs that nobody knew about. But it wasn't, the stocking program hadn't started. So it was, there were a couple little trout streams in the area, which I didn't really get to fish until I got my driver's license, because they were about 45 minutes away. So I fished a lot of the shoreline of Lake Ontario for smallmouth and,
yeah,
and white bass and white perch and yellow perch and, you know, bluegills, whatever would bite.
Yeah.
So, you know, I kind of learned on the warm water end of things and then started fishing trout.
Let's go back to the beginning of Orvis here, because this is the late 1800s.
Yeah. Yep.
And then what was the main product line there in the early 1900s?
It was fly rods and fly reels. Charles Orvis patented pretty much the first modern upright ventilated fly fishing reel. So they sold reels. They had reels made. They sold a lot of flies. They had a fly tying operation with a whole bunch of women that sat in a room and tied flies all day long.
Amazing.
And so, yeah, it was fly. I think they sold some waders and what they called wading brogues, what we call wading boots now.
Right.
And, you know, there weren't a lot. They didn't have the same kind of gear we have these days, so it was pretty basic.
That's so innovative at that time period, though, to be doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a pretty innovative guy.
So early 1900s, they're selling some rods and some reels and some waders and some wading boots. And what was the marketing strategy? Like, who was he selling to? You had, there's a mail order, right? You said it was mail order.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. He was probably selling to wealthy old white guys on the Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah.
I imagine.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And I'm sure it wasn't, you know, there weren't millions of customers.
Yeah.
Fly fishing's always been a little esoteric, and it was in those days,
yeah.
Anyways. But we don't know a lot about the early customers.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And then was there any time periods or time stamps along the way that were major mile marks for Orvis?
It kind of had a golden age, I think, in the 1870s to probably the turn of the 20th century, and it kind of poked along. We don't know much about the business in the early part of the 20th century. I think he died, and then he passed it on to you know, his family. I think he had I don't know if it was a brother or what. He had his daughter Mary Orvis Marbury was a very famous fly tyer and actually wrote a book on the first book that documented American fly patterns. There was never any list of American fly patterns.
Right.
She was the first one that did that. And then, you know, I don't know much about the early 20th century. I do know that during the Depression, the company almost went under, and they were doing things like repairing bicycles. And,
okay.
You know, the rod shop was pretty much doing...
Not that much at the
time.
Yeah,
and then during World War II, I know the business was, of course, slow because all the men were off at war, and gas was rationed, and they built impregnated bamboo ski poles for the 10th Mountain Division.
Okay.
Because they had bamboo and it was strong and made good ski poles. He actually sold it in 1939. The Orvis family sold it to a guy named Ducky Corcoran, D.C. Corcoran, who bought it and then, you know, ran it until 1965. He owned it until 1965. He expanded the catalog into, gadgets and they had that little spin tackle in there because spinning was a new thing in the 50s and it was very hot. So they sold some spin tackle. You know, we have catalogs back from the 50s and 60s, so we know a lot more about that. And then in 1965, Lee Perkins Sr. bought the company from Ducky. And I actually knew Ducky when I first started. He was quite an old character.
He's got a name like Ducky. Yes, yeah, he's a character, right?
He was a character. He's come to the office and he was complaining. He was complaining about all his... He was old and he was complaining about all his friends dying. He said, Tom, it's killing me. Yeah. All my friends are dying. And I said, it's really tough to lose people like that. And he said, well, it's not losing people. It's the flour bills that are killing me. That was a classic Ducky.
The flour bills, yeah. Not that people are dying.
He was cheap.
Okay. All right.
And then Lee Perkins bought it about, 10 years before I was there. And Lee Perkins was he's still alive. He's 91, I think, and he still fishes and hunts almost every day.
Good for him. But we all wish to be that.
Yeah. But he was a real marketing genius and ahead of his time. And he was one of the leaders of the mail order list business, where companies started exchanging names, mailing lists. But that wasn't done before he, started working with a few people.
Interesting.
So you can thank him for all your junk mail.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah. People think he brought the clothing into the Orvis line, but it was really Ducky who noticed that men would come up to the Orvis store in Vermont and they'd drag their wives along with them and they'd be looking at fly rods and the wives would be standing around doing nothing, and Ducky figured, well, I can make some money off these women, so he started bringing some clothing in the store. But Lee really took that to the next level and expanded the clothing business, which, is our cash cow. It keeps
things moving.
It's kept us going through some lean times. And, there are times when fly rods have also kept us going through some lean times when the clothing business wasn't doing so well.
Sure. But that's interesting how people would come, the men would come for their sporting equipment.
Yeah.
But the women were just kind of hanging around.
Not many women fished in those days. I mean, there were some. There were some women that fished, but there weren't a lot. And so he sold them clothing.
Well, why don't we talk about that now, too? Because I know Orvis is kind of leading the way in the Orvis 50-50.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So let's tell our listeners about the Orvis 50-50 and how that's going so far.
Well, it's hard to measure because it's not a sales or a marketing tool. It's kind of an initiative and a challenge to the industry to just get more diversity into the sport of fly fishing.
For those who don't know, Orvis 50-50 is trying to have 50% of the fly fishers out there be women.
Yeah.
Men and women. Yeah. 50-50, equal.
Yeah. And it may be tough. We may never get there. But it's a stretch goal.
It's a good initiative.
Yeah, and there's no reason why there shouldn't be 50% women in fly fishing, because there's nothing that should keep a woman from fly fishing, right?
Right.
It's just something anybody can do. So it's a challenge to the industry, to, fly shops, to hire more females to work in the fly shops. We want to see more female guides. But, as I said, we can't really measure it.
Right.
We have one little metric where we look at the percentage of women's waiters to men's waiters, where we have the exact same price point and offering, and that's kind of a little indicator, but,
Right.
There's no demographics available really in the fly fishing industry. So we're just doing everything we can to support clubs and share information with people that want to run women's classes or family classes. I mean, it's not just getting women into fly fishing, it's getting families into fly fishing, getting the whole family to do it, because it's a great family activity.
What are some of the things that Orvis is doing? You talked about a bunch of initiatives, but from a manufacturing standpoint, what are some of the things that Orvis is doing to promote the 50-50, whether it be sizing for women or that type of thing?
It's mainly, it's mainly waders and good technical clothing. Women can use the same tackle, the same rods, the same reels. Women don't need anything special other than they need to be made welcome. They need to see that other women are doing it. So we've made a conscious effort to make sure we put more pictures of women on our website and our catalog, in the videos we make, yeah. You know, just showing women that, hey, you know, you can do it. It's easy. And there are barriers, you know, women do have some barriers because they often feel uncomfortable in a fly shop or
right.
in a club or something because it's a male bastion. It's not as much anymore. It's getting better.
Yeah, because you've got like Dunn Magazine. You have the yeah. women's showcase at the fly fishing shows.
Yep.
You have Fishy Wear, which kind of has some women clothing.
Yeah, yeah. And some, you know, some women are uncomfortable taking lessons or learning it with men. They get intimidated. So we do have some women's only classes and trips, hosted trips for women only.
Well, that sounds really cool. I've heard some critiques
right.
about the
yep.
Orvis 50-50. Like,
yep.
why are you segregating? Why are you
yeah.
focus
yeah.
so much on women?
Yeah.
Like, what have
yeah.
you heard about that?
Well, you know, as anything, there's different points of view, especially these days on social media.
Yeah.
The critiques that I have heard are, well, you're just singling them out and you're starting this battle of the sexes. And
that's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, and you're singling them out. We're not. We're just saying, hey, look, there aren't as many women in fly fishing as men.
Yeah.
Why not? We did a lot of investigation and talked to a lot of women who fly fish to figure out why there aren't more women and what were the barriers to them. And a lot of it was intimidation and just pals to fish with, you know, other women to fish with. So we're not trying to single women out. We're just trying to, and it's families too. It's not just women, but it's getting everyone involved in fly fishing.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that too. I'm glad we covered that because I didn't really think about that till I actually heard some critiques. And then I was like, why would someone say that? Because let's just have more people enjoy the sport.
Yeah.
And if it's women, then let's make them feel comfortable.
Well, you know, no matter what you do on social media, there's
right.
going to be some jerks that take you to task. So we rolled with it.
Before we jump into some cool fishing stories and fishing topics, let's talk about some of the complimentary as well as some of the critiques or challenges that Orvis faces.
Uh-huh.
Let's start with the complimentary. What are some things that people say to you that really make you feel good that you're part of Orvis?
There's two things that I hear that really make me feel good. One is that you guys are, besides the 50-50,
yep.
One of the things is that you guys are really at the forefront of education. You know, you do schools, you do free classes at, you know, Fly Fishing 101 at our retail stores. We have 15,000 to 18,000 people get free fly casting, you know, 2-hour fly casting introductory courses for free
cool.
at any of our retail stores in the spring. And we have the Learning Center and we have podcasts and, you know, we have the blog, which a lot of it is teaching.
Sure.
We have videos. So, you know, we do a lot to help people realize that fly fishing is not that hard and
yeah.
they shouldn't overthink it. It's pretty simple and it's just fun. And we want more people to enjoy what we enjoy. So
for sure,
the education is one thing. The other thing is our commitment to conservation. You know, Orvis is privately owned still by the Perkins family, and we're not afraid to take a stand that some people might take issue with, such as Pebble Mine or the Everglades. You know, we're not afraid to do it, and we can be confident doing it because we don't have to answer to any shareholders. As long as the owners of the company are cool with it and they're ardent conservationists, even the retired ones are on the boards of conservation organizations, we can really do what we want.
Yeah.
And we can stick our neck out.
That's awesome.
You know, unfortunately, we never used to get into political issues with our conservation. It was always about habitat and stream reconstruction and things like that. But, you know, these days, you can't really be involved in protecting our resources without getting political.
Sure.
And we try not to get too political, but, you know, sometimes you can't avoid
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sometimes you have to draw the line.
Yeah. So those are the two things I think that I really hear from people.
Very cool.
About, you know, why they're ardent Orvis customers.
Phenomenal. What would be a critique that you hear about Orvis?
Oh, you know, it's the fact that Orvis isn't really a fly fishing company. It's a clothing and a dog bed company.
Okay, I didn't want to say that, but
no,
I'm glad you said that because I've heard
yeah.
the dog bed thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a schizophrenic. It's kind of a schizophrenic collection that we just developed over the years. You know, we've kind of grown into. You know, I think what a lot of people don't realize is that there are more really serious sicko fly anglers
in Orvis,
sure. than in any other company in the industry. that are really passionate and dedicated to it, and that we spend more on product development and innovations than nearly anybody else. I don't have an issue with the clothing deal, but people have to look at the realities and not the perception.
Exactly. I'm in Orvis waders and boots, and I take care of my boots, and they last forever. So it's incredible gear. My waders, I've had them for years. Don't leak. So
yeah,
I can say for myself that Orvis makes great products. So what would you say would be a challenge the company faces today?
Challenge.
Are there challenges that Orvis faces day-to-day in their manufacturing or in their marketplace or in their media or in their sales? Or what are some challenges that or a challenge?
You know, one of the things, I guess, is sustainability and renewability. And,
sure.
You know, some of the products we make are not recyclable or environmentally friendly. And that's an issue.
So is that something you're looking to address?
We're trying. I mean, it's just like anything else. We have to make compromises in our lives. We have to do what we can, but we also have to make compromises in our lives. And you know,
so
we use plastics and resins and things like that that you know are used in lots of industries. But we, being an outdoor industry, we should look for alternatives.
Well, that's amazing that you recognize that and are actually making active reviews on possibly changing some of that.
Oh yeah. We're always looking at those things. We're looking at, you know, making our we have an initiative to try to make all of our offices and stores carbon neutral.
Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about, I know you've done some work with the new Fly Fisher.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That must be cool to get out there with the film crew and.
Well, it is a good excuse to get Tom out there fishing in places that he might ordinarily not get
sure.
to. But you know, the new Fly Fisher has been a really good partner, the TV show, because they're all about education.
Yep.
I mean, a lot of TV shows are just about going to a lodge or plugging a lure or something like
right.
that. But they're about education. And we did a show 7 years ago called The Orvis Guide to Fly Fishing, which was strictly a teaching show. It wasn't about destinations. It was about techniques and,
yep.
and learning how to fly fish from the very beginning. And that was really popular. We used it as a basis for our learning center. And we're going to do a second season this year. And that'll be a little bit more advanced stuff, a little bit more in detail, and then we'll be able to double the content in our learning center. But we shoot that with the same production company that the new Fly Fisher uses.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I've also co-hosted some of their new Fly Fisher shows. But we work with them. In fact, what we're going to do is go to locations, and I'll go off and shoot my how-to technique stuff, and Mark Melnick will do an episode of the new Fly Fisher at the same location, and then we can share footage.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so it should work out pretty well.
How many episodes was there of the Orvis Guide to Fly Fishing?
There were 13.
And that's online?
Yeah, it's online. It's on YouTube, and it's all in the Orvis Learning Center. It's also on Amazon Prime now, too. You can get it on it. If you're an Amazon Prime member, you can watch all those episodes for free.
Well, let's talk about the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast. Yeah,
on the podcast, talking about the podcast.
All right.
So, 2008, what gave you the idea to start a podcast?
It wasn't my idea.
Okay.
We had a guy that was in charge of this new thing called social media, which nobody quite got, you know.
And, yeah, because we're at the beginning there.
Said, yeah, this social media thing is going to be big. And, okay, we got to be on Facebook. All right, yeah, okay. And Tom, I think you should do a podcast. And I said, why should I do a podcast? I mean, fly fishing is such a visual thing.
Well, right.
How can you do a podcast on fly fishing? So he said, well, why don't you just try it? And I said, okay, I'll try it. So I tried it. And it worked. You know, it's 10 years later. You know, I started out doing all the episodes, just me talking.
Yeah.
And then I realized that people are getting sick of hearing me talk, and I should get some guests on there.
Okay.
And so I just kind of followed. Very early on, we took questions from people. We set up an email address and a phone number where we could take questions. And very early on, I realized that I don't really have to plan these things because all the listeners are giving me ideas.
Yeah.
And so I'm just going to give. I'm not going to do what I want to do with these podcasts. I'm going to give the listeners what they want. I'm going to answer the questions they want answered. It doesn't matter what I'm interested in. What are you interested in? What do you want to learn more about? Who do you want me to get on as a guest? So I just kind of really let them call the shots.
Well, that's so interesting too, because, you know, just being a podcaster and like talking to people, like, what's a podcast? Well, so, you know, like the Orvis Guide to Pod, you know, the Orvis Guide podcast, and the, like, with Tom Rosenbauer, like, oh yeah, I love that because I listen to it and they answer the questions. And so it's just how you say that. People really enjoy having that question and answer session at the beginning.
Well, yeah, you know, you're going to get the most eyeballs or earballs or whatever in fly fishing by doing how-to stuff.
Yeah.
It's either how to do it or where to go. You know, that's what people want to know. And so that's what I've really based my podcast on. Now, I'll interview authors. You know, I'll go on to different subjects. We do a fair amount of conservation. But I really try to make the meat of the podcast about, here's how to do it. Here's some ideas on how to make your time on the water more fun.
Yeah, and successful.
Yeah, and successful. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you have a studio there in Manchester? Do you? Because I know you do some by remotely or...
I don't do any remotely. I used a remote mic for a while, and I wasn't happy with it. So I have a quote, studio, which is a closet.
They gave you a closet?
And yeah, and they've recently moved five people into the room. The room used to be empty next to the closet, but they've recently moved five people into the room right outside of the podcast studio, and they have this great big screen on the wall that has a big speaker on it where they do conference calls.
And you're doing podcasts.
Yeah, so I think I gotta
have a conversation with somebody.
I gotta move it or something. Okay. I can't move five people's place of work. You know?
Right, so you might have to move the podcast.
I don't know where I'm gonna go. We're kind of running out of space in our Sunderland, Vermont office, but we'll figure it out.
Now, do you have a schedule that you try to keep, or how do you usually do your...
I try to do one a week.
Yep.
I try to do one a week, and I don't always get there.
It's tough, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, if I can get the guests lined up, I'm going to be doing a fair amount of traveling with a TV show this year, so I'm trying to back myself up with a whole bunch of episodes.
Yeah, put them in the bank.
Yeah, put them in the bank so that I can release them while I'm not there.
And then sometimes the guests, they call in?
Yeah, I use a telephone and a speakerphone. I've tried Skype, and I wasn't really happy with it.
Yeah, I'm not either. Yeah,
just the digital signal sometimes drops. So I just use a speakerphone, and it works okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's not the greatest sound quality on the guest end, but it works. You know, it works okay.
Tell me about the Orvis Learning Center online, too, with all the different... You have all kinds of videos, and you have the tying videos with Tim Flagler.
Yeah. Well, it was, you know, we realized early on that the way people learn these days is by watching videos. They don't really learn from books that much anymore, and not everybody can go to a school. So we wanted to reach more people and help them learn fly fishing, and, you know, having videos, free streaming videos online is the way to go. But we wanted it to be organized and curated, because you can go on YouTube and learn anything you want, right? But it's not curated and it's not organized, and you can go down a rat hole pretty easily on YouTube.
Yeah.
So we wanted a place where people could go, where they could just almost do a correspondence course on fly fishing. And there's articles there too, and we put the podcasts on there so that they can search the podcast for a topic. But the video lessons are the meat and potatoes of the learning center.
And you have the tying. There's Tim Flagler, the only tying?
Yeah, Tim Flagler's, he's the best. He does the best fly tying videos. And
can I tell him you said that?
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell him I said that.
He's going to listen to this.
He's the best. I tell him that all the time.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome.
And I'll say it online, too, quite often. In fact, I just did a podcast with Tim that'll be out in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And that's a super popular one.
Yeah,
If you haven't had him on your show,
I have.
All right. He's the best. He's a great guy. We just asked Tim. We said, hey, Tim, you want to get your, tying videos out to a wider audience? We'll put them on our learning center. And he said, sure. Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah. So whenever Tim does a video, we put it up on Learning Center. And then Tim also does exclusive content for us. He does these one-minute fly tying tips, which are really basic tips, one a week, and then we put those on the Learning Center as well.
Speaking of the new fly fisher, I remember seeing an episode of you going steelheading.
Yeah.
And you were having the toughest time trying to find a fish. You were like this close to swearing off steelheading forever.
That wasn't the new fly fisher.
No.
That was a film called Chrome that was done with Conservation Hawks, which is an organization that is trying to make hunters and fishermen more aware of climate change.
And then you caught one towards the end.
Yeah.
And you were like, how much you loved it. I love, Steelhead is awesome.
Yeah.
That wasn't the new fly fisher.
No, it wasn't the new fly fisher. That was Conservation Hawks.
Interesting. I must have started online then.
Yeah, you can see it online.
Well, that was a cool episode because you were like so close, like, oh, yeah. Steelhead's driving me crazy. And then, oh, I love Steelhead.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, before we close, Tom, you've been able to do so much for trout. You've done saltwater.
Yeah, I love saltwater.
Yeah, where would you love to go in saltwater?
I really love Cuba. I've been going to Cuba the past couple of years hosting a trip, and I really, really love it. Love the people, the food, the music. The guides are incredible. The habitat's pretty unspoiled. And I love the Bahamas, very similar situation. I love the Bahamas as well. Those are really favorite places of mine.
Yeah. So just from a style standpoint, you've done the trout, you've done steelhead, and you've dry fly, nymph, you've done all salt, fresh.
Yeah.
If you could just wake up and just do one specific style in a specific place of the world, where would you go and what would you do?
You know, Rob, I think it would be anything where there's sight fishing.
Okay.
Because, you know, Todd Tanner, who runs Conservation Hawks, gave me the greatest compliment I've ever, one of the greatest compliments I've ever had in fly fishing. He said, you know, you're a real predator. You're a predator.
Well, that was a compliment.
Yeah, I thought that was a predator. I mean, I'm not that aggressive, but, I love stalking. I love the stalk. I love sight fishing. So any kind of fishing that involves, it could be carp, it could be bonefish, it could be trout, it could be bluegills.
But it's the sight fishing.
Any type, you know, stripers on the flats.
Yeah.
You know, in our part of the world.
Yeah, for sure.
Any kind of sight fishing is what I love. I love stock, and I prefer to have my feet on the ground and not be in a boat if I can help it. I really like being alone, walking, and just one-on-one with the fish without somebody yelling in my ear.
Very cool.
And just you and the fish. That's what I love the most.
Interesting you should say that, because I've actually seen you in a drift boat and you hooked up on one of the shows. You hooked up, and as soon as you were able to get to the shallows, you quickly got out of the boat and fought the fish.
Yeah. Well, it's a lot easier to fight a fish with your feet on the ground anyways.
And netting it, too, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So,
Tom, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the Fly Fishing Journeys podcast.
Well, Rob, it's been my pleasure. It's been really fun being on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, that's cool. Here we are in Pleasanton, and you've been so gracious with your time and the original Fly Fishing podcast. So to have you on our show, it's been our pleasure. So thank you, Tom, so much.
Well, thank you, Rob.
And you can actually find your podcast on all the iTunes and Stitcher and Spotify.
Same place yours is. People can listen to them one after the other, right?
Yeah, and Orvis.com.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, Rob. Thank you.
You've been listening to Fly Fishing Journeys with your host, Rob Giannino. To be notified of new episodes, subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts. You can follow us on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. For past episodes, check out flyfishingjourneys.com. Fly fishing is a journey, and we're glad you're on this journey with us.